Hello, and welcome to the Morning Bell podcast, where we interview authors, discuss writing-related topics, and talk about the writing process as a whole. If you want any more information about the Morning Bell and what it is, look up themorningbell.net. If you have any questions or suggestions for topics that you'd like to see discussed, email the co-editor of the Morning Bell, Kezia Lebansky, at the email address keziaa@themorningbell.net. Thank you, and we hope you enjoy listening. Hello, and welcome to the Morning Bell podcast. My name is Joel Martin, and we are doing the first podcast ever, really. Yes, we did the interview. How long ago was that, Lucas? Like a month ago?
Introduce me properly.
Yep, I'll get to that eventually, but... That was Lucas DeQuincio, and we'll do a proper introduction. But yes, the first interview was with Cassandra, who is actually on the show as well. But it was more of an interview rather than a podcast. And this time, we're catching up with Cassandra and Lucas, the editor of The Morning Bell, and having a bit of a casual conversation. So no structure. We're just talking about a topic that might help emerging writers, or a topic or two that is brought to us by either Lucas, Cassandra, or myself. And we just talk about it for about 40 to an hour. So first up, Lucas, welcome to the show. Tell us who you are, what you do, why you're here.
I'm Lucas, and I like long walks on the beach, and I hate guys who are rude.
And his name is Lucas DeQuincio, by the way. How exotic. What a good name.
You'd be surprised how... I think it's the Q and the Z. It just throws people right off.
Yes, it's spelled D-I space Q-U-I-N-Z-I-O.
Just in case you want to Google me or something.
Yes, that's actually what I set that up as. So what do you do, Lucas?
Oh, yeah, no. I'm the co-editor-in-chief of The Morning Bell, if you didn't know that.
Wow.
Because you like The Morning Bell so much, listener.
Yeah, exactly. Or else you wouldn't be listening, right?
Or perhaps they're just being introduced to The Morning Bell through this show.
Aha,
and they're yet
there
to
you
like
go.
It, but please do.
Well, fantastic. And what
themorningbell.net.
You ruined my segue.
It's .net because .com was
Lucas,
really...
you know I love my segues. And the person, the voice, the disembodied voice you just heard was Cassandra L. Cassandra, you were on our interview. You don't have PTSD. From that experience. So tell us a bit about yourself in case they didn't hear that interview.
Okay, in case they didn't hear the first one. I'm Cassandra. I'm, an emerging writer. I'm currently studying screenwriting, but also write prose. And yes, I've had one piece in The Morning Bell. Very exciting. And another one coming up in Visible Ink, which should be published in about 3 weeks.
Fantastic. Awesome. And where can we get Visible Ink?
Good question. should probably have this prepared. It is the RMIT professional writing and editing publication.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe they have a website. If you Google Visible Ink, that should come up somewhere.
Fantastic. And you're in the next issue?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. November 7th being launched.
Well, there you go. Well, you've heard from our two guests, and Lucas will probably be a regular on this podcast, as well as Kezia, who unfortunately can't be here. She took ill, and she has been ill for some time. So unfortunately, she can't join us this time, but we'll definitely get her on in the future podcasts. So... how have you guys been? Let's start with you, Cassandra. What have you been doing this week in the writing world?
In the writing world, mostly just working on assignments. It's the crunch end of semester at the moment. So, we've got 2 weeks to get all our work done. So, since we last spoke, I've written an entire 120-page feature film script, which pretty much absorbed all my life for about 4 weeks. Also working on a few short stories. TV pilot, or the first act of a TV pilot for my TV class, which has been a lot of fun. So, but yeah, pretty much nothing that's not been class related.
Wow, I thought, you know, when I ask people, oh, what have you been doing this week? Oh, you know, I went out last week to the beach and had a coffee sometime and, you know, maybe did some work. But then again, that's sort of the people I talk to. And then Cassandra's like, oh, you know, I wrote a screenplay and maybe a TV pilot.
I tried to write a whole screenplay in a month.
Really?
It went terribly. Yeah. I didn't have the school deadline to, you know,
yeah,
get me, to push me.
Yeah.
I set my own deadline to try and enter a competition. Mm-hmm. I didn't get even remotely close.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough, man. Like, NaNoWriMo? NaNoWriMo? How do you say that? It's close.
I would say NaNoWriMo or NaNoWriMo, because yeah, it feels like re should be, I don't know, but everyone says, oh, but it's writer, it should be RIMO.
Yeah.
So now I've had to.
Sounds like the posh.
Is that, we're talking about the thing where you, like, write a novel in a month or something, is that?
Yes.
50,000 words in November.
November, and yeah, that's insane, isn't it? And I'm sure there's some people that do it and do it really well. But I know a couple of writers that often use NaNoWriMo as a first drafting phase, like giving themselves the deadline to do it and then get a first draft out. It might not be like a brilliant, polished novel or anything, but it's, you know, it's a good impetus to get that first draft out. And if you're listening, that's a piece of advice. Just set some deadlines, you know. It's good.
I can vouch for NaNoWriMo, NaNoWriMo.
Mm.
This year, I think, will be my eighth.
Wow. Okay. So you've been doing this for a while then?
Yeah, a few years. Mm-hmm. It's really funny. There's been some years where I've been really super excited by my idea that I'm working on, and I think the best I've done it in was 13 days.
Wow.
Took 2 weeks off work and just went crazy. Other times I've hit massive plot holes and I've ended up hating my characters and I've been writing up right until midnight on the last day. So, yeah, it's amazing how deadlines are great.
Yep.
But the enthusiasm for your project, if that goes, that can be a real killer for your work.
Yeah.
You've
just got to believe in that concept to get it across, I suppose, in that month. And and maybe that's a good pruning tool. Like, oh, this is just not going to survive a novel, you know?
Mm.
Maybe.
And learning what ideas work for what format.
Mm-hmm.
When you go, oh, yeah, this is a novel, and you get 25,000 words in and go, wow, I've exhausted that one.
Yeah. Especially for you because you do, you know, different formats of writing. You know, you're not specifically a novel writer or a short story. You do dabble in a lot of stuff, including screenwriting. So, yeah. Yeah, I guess that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Like, see which format fits. And I was, this is a bit of a tangent, but it's a podcast, so we'll go on tangents.
It's all about tangents.
Yeah, that's it. We love tangents. We were talking about TV shows, specifically ones that seem to have a really good concept, but stretch it out to a full season of, you know, 13 or 14 episodes, when it very well could have been a fantastic miniseries.
Mm.
Like, just take the first three episodes. You'd be fantastic. And this is just, you know, my opinion on the show The Following. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. Is it's basically following a very enigmatic serial killer and the followers he gets and how he uses writing, which there you go. See what I'm doing here?
Oh, yes.
The connection. Mm-hmm. It's very good. But yeah, he uses writing as that conduit. It's really good. As in, for me anyway, the first three episodes, great. Really good. But then it just sort of gets into this procedural crime thing, you know, when it takes a formula and it just does the formula again and again and again.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, this could have been a fantastic miniseries, you know, do a really short, punchy, because it had a lot of impact, right? That first episode, man, a lot of that stuff was great. The imagery, the way they used writing, the character, brilliant, really good. but they just can't sustain that, you know? And yeah, could have been a great miniseries. And if you look at the Sherlock BBC show, that's, I guess, an example. They keep it short, and yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing I was going to ask. Was The Following an American show?
Yes, it was.
See, Americans don't seem to be really big on the miniseries, whereas
no, they
in
don't,
England,
do they?
It yeah. seems to be a bit more...
The norm?
The norm.
Yep.
And I quite like that.
I don't know how lucrative they are in
Probably
terms of money.
Much.
To be cynical, but basically... it's the same. It's possibly the same reason why British shows their series are 6 to 8 episodes and not 22. Yeah.
And I guess when you've got, you know, the US model where you've got different channels competing against each other versus, you know, the BBC, which is quite well funded, you probably can get away more with miniseries and shorter series.
Yeah.
Versus in the US where you've got everyone fighting with each other.
Yeah, and another example, this is not a TV show podcast, by the way, guys, but we're talking about writing, and screenwriting is a big part of that, is Hell on Wheels. It's a series that's very close to my heart because I love Westerns. And Hell on Wheels, fantastic first season, not bad second season, sort of drops off at 3. It just keeps going, you know? Yeah, you need some finality, and it's the way a lot of people get turned off comics is because it never ends. You never see an arc, and so why get invested when it just never ends? And then, you know, for some people, that's fine. But, and that's an example of that. But just in case you're wondering, Lucas, the reason I watched The Following, and here's the kicker, is because Joe Carroll, the former professor turned serial killer, is played by the wonderful James Purefoy, who also played, drumroll, Solomon Kane in the movie.
Joel's favorite thing ever.
Yes, in case you're wondering,
Solomon
Kane
series.
Solomon Kane, the movie, was fantastic. The books were fantastic. The graphic novels, which I just read in the last week, were fantastic. Take it all with a grain of salt because I'm in love with that character, which doesn't quite make a lot of sense because he's a bit one-dimensional, but, you know. Yes, it's really good. And, yeah, and getting back to it again, The Following was a very good first episodes, but too bad they didn't carry it over. And I don't think they could have, you know, because it's too much going on to carry this over through the entire series. But like you said, maybe it's an American thing.
You know, yeah, well, there's so many US shows that stretch out whatever it is for way too long.
Yeah.
You know, from what I'm hearing from you, it sounds a bit Dextery.
Yeah, I've never seen that, so.
And that was a show that went for, I don't know, 6, 7 seasons, a while.
Yeah.
And got stale after like 2, 3.
Yep. It, like the 24 series, which had a really good concept.
And then they did it again.
Yeah.
But then that's action, I guess.
But, I mean, there's
criticism. Get away with that more. Even, there's not much of a plot.
Yeah, that's true. Jack Bauer, which is...
Kicking people in the face.
Yeah.
Punching problems away.
America.
That doesn't get old.
No.
But then I guess you could look at series that didn't run too long and ended really well and worked with the time they had, like Breaking Bad. That final episode was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And that's one series that comes up time and time again as an example of, you know, textbook amazing TV writing. The Wire is another one.
Yes, I've heard
that. 5 seasons, wrapped everything up nicely. I think it was David Simon said recently he couldn't imagine where the characters are now because the series just finished and it was great and it didn't need anything more. So, you know, we've got so many examples of things that run on and on and on and, you know, to use that hackneyed expression, jump the shark. But I think you can learn some really great lessons from the ones that don't.
And do it right, yeah.
And, you know, look at them and see, you know, exactly how they did it. how they did arc, and take the lessons from that, rather than just look at the bad examples and say, oh, well, that was crap and that shouldn't have gone on. And,
Yeah. And yeah, that's definitely interesting.
And you can also look at what not to do from the ones that do drag on. Like to mention Jumping the Shark, Happy Days. Oh my goodness. Have you seen any later episodes?
I haven't even heard of Happy Days. What is this?
Oh, Joel, no.
I've
Wait, not. Are you serious?
I think I actually am. Wait, maybe I just don't remember the Nope.
Okay, this is
breaking news, guys.
Breaking news, have... Joel Martin doesn't know what Happy Days is.
Happy Days is okay. Is an American television sitcom that first run from January 15, 1974 to September 24th, 1984 on ABC. It's a sitcom. Well, okay, I didn't see it, which is, yeah, I'll stick with that.
You didn't even see reruns during the day, like it's on weekend or something?
I don't generally watch television during the day. I miss out, but yeah, I don't
I think
watch
we need
television.
To deal with this after recording.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's not like it's a unmissable TV show. Yeah, no.
It's like what? Star Wars, isn't it, Lucas? By the way, this
someone
is an
hasn't watched
joke.
Either.
Yeah.
A certain is... two people?
Really? Okay. I'm not the only
Maybe.
One.
I don't know.
No, I've seen most of Star Wars. I've seen at least three of the movies.
Oh, but that's a lot, yeah.
Which three?
The first and the third one of the older ones, and the first one of the newer ones.
That's all right.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I possibly saw
me.
The second one of the old ones because my mum really likes Harrison Ford.
With
so
good
we kind of grew up with that.
Yeah, Harrison Ford is cool. Yeah, I grew up with Indiana Jones, so I guess it's not too far different in that respect. Yeah, no, I haven't seen Happy Days. Well, something to check out, and I will check back with you guys on the next podcast. All right, here's a promise. I'm probably going to watch the first episode of Happy Days and come back and talk to you, whoever we've got on the podcast, what I saw. There you go.
And I hope whoever it is listen to this thing. It's like, I thought I was talking about my book. Stop talking about Happy Days.
Yeah. They come on the podcast. We invite them on. It's, no, we're going to promote you and talk
gonna
about
promote
your writing.
You.
So anyway, I went back and watched Happy
How
Days.
How cool is Fonzie?
So, yes, this is going to be interesting. But, yeah, I will check that out. But I love tangents, and we went on a few tangents there. But let's scoot it back a little bit to some writing, shall we? Like I said at the start, we're talking about topics that could help emerging writers. And I heard a very interesting topic just before the show that I think Cassandra brought up about Cassandra?
Would that
Cassandra?
Have...
No, I tried.
It was definitely not about Cassandra.
No.
I believe it was about genre.
That's the one.
Is that what we were talking about?
Yeah. So go ahead and talk to us. Well, what is the issue with genre? Or is that actually the topic, the issue with genre?
Yeah, I guess the issue of genre.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be something that, I'm assuming we're going out to an international audience here, but... you hear certainly in Australia in some quarters, genre is frowned upon, yet everyone seems to, at least certainly all of my teachers, we hear a lot about genre and, how important it is and, what exactly is it? Does its definitions change with different modes of writing, like film and television versus books and short stories, how important is it? How overt should it be?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm sort of jumping on this before Lucas. The reason you think you're hearing a lot of genre, do you think that's to do with because you're doing a screenwriting course rather than, say, a writing course specifically? Do you
think
that could be a consideration?
I think that is definitely a consideration.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a lot of discussions in class about genre and audience expectation and finding your audience. But I don't think it should just be a film and television thing. I mean, one of the things what, you know, one of the reasons why it's so important, we're told, is, you know, if you open your TV guide, what's there going to be written next to your show or your film? You know, how are people going to know what they're going to see? Yeah, I don't know why it seems, certainly in the more literary circles, to be frowned upon.
There was a really interesting interview that I'll eventually dig up while we talk about this, that talks about, from the perspective of popular fiction writers, which, by the way, everybody out there, it's sort of similar. The idea of genre fiction, popular fiction, yeah, you know, you can exchange that term, I suppose. It was a very good interview from the perspective of authors that do popular fiction or genre fiction and looking at literary and saying, like, oh, why is this an issue? But I suppose it's different, right? Because you're talking about fiction, you're talking about a wide range. Some of it includes science fiction and fantasy, which a lot of people might not consider legitimate literature, not writing. It's literature, which is apparently a highbrow thing. Maybe, because I know I write a lot of fantasy. I write a lot of pulp, you know, in that classic term of pulp. You know, I write stuff that you could pick up on a news rack. I know this sounds so archaic, doesn't it? News rack. But
who buys books anymore?
But yeah, no, pulp is actually who buys pulp anymore, because it used to be those, you know, very bad sort of quality paper books that you could buy for like a couple of cents,
yes,
or whatever.
For the young ones, that's what pulp is.
Yeah.
It's not just a cool word Quentin Tarantino made up.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually a good point. That is actually what we would consider pulp. And you'd pick it up, similar to what a comic book would be. In the, you know, you pick up a comic book, it's pretty cheap, it's a couple of cents, things have changed, obviously. And you read it, and you're done. That's it. And I brought up Solomon Cain earlier, and that's an example of pulp fiction. Not the movie, again. It's fiction you pick up, you read, that's it, it's done. I can definitely see, because it's involved in the genre of fiction, how people can frown at that and say, oh, it's just like casual reading, you know, that's not legitimate. And I can see that, right? I write it. But at the same time, just because it does not have any, it is not speaking of anything more than what's written on the page. You know, that's it. What you get on the page is, that's basically it. It's an adventure story, it's an action story, whatever. And yeah, maybe, is that worthy of criticism?
Well, I wonder if whether something is literary or not, or literature or not, comes down to the test of time. Like, a lot of those old pulp writers are being republished.
Literature. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Science fiction not being considered literary or literature. 1984, Brave New World.
Yeah.
And fantasy, even the most dense of fantasy, you know, Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
Yeah.
You know, when Game of Thrones is on TV, try to avoid it. It's difficult. And that is as dense can be.
Mm. But I'd say that's a fairly light read, though. I breeze through those, and I'm a really slow reader.
There's enough there. You can kill a burglar with those books.
I don't actually know if that's possible, Lucas. That's quite soft. If you get,
if
like
you throw it hard enough,
it's a paperback edition. If you get maybe,
I'm sure MythBusters can tackle it.
Yes, there we go. Here's a challenge, MythBusters. If you're listening, because I know you are listening to this podcast, test if a paperback book by George R. R. Martin can kill your crash test dummy. So there you go.
Yeah.
That's a challenge.
Can you knock out Buster with the Song of Ice and Fire?
It's a really good
paperback job. Or is there a hardcover edition?
Oh, yeah, there is hardcover. Yeah,
I presume there's a hardcover.
You have to be scientific about these kinds of things.
You got to try both.
Yeah, definitely.
And then if it doesn't work, and nothing impressive happens, they can bring out like a book the size of the house and then blow it up.
Exactly, just to get the audience entertained. But anyway, we cut you off, Cassandra, there, so go on.
Oh, I can't even remember what...
You were saying that it was a light read.
Oh, the Game of Thrones books.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know that enough time has passed to show that, you know, I think mm-hmm. when we start talking about the merit of writing, it seems to be something that changes as things are given time to get some distance, mature, mm-hmm. find new readers. Do they still find readers?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up time, because I agree with that completely in the fact that, like I said, Solomon Cain was considered to be pulp and Conan is considered to be pulp. Now it's just called fantasy, fantasy literature. And yeah, but does that make it legitimate? Does that give it an equal footing to literary fiction? I think so, because I think it fulfills a need, I suppose, in the reading of it. Somebody who wants to tell stories and isn't really truly invested in the words is somebody who writes genre fiction or genre writing, popular fiction. But somebody who cares very much about the study of words and the way words can be used to convey an image, a meaning, would be a literary writer. And I found that quite true, because that doesn't mean one is more legitimate than the other. I just feel like it's two ways of expressing something differently as well.
See, that's why I think popular fiction and genre fiction are not necessarily the same thing.
All
like,
right.
Why can't you write a science fiction book that does pay attention to, you know, what you're trying to say and the words? And I'm forgetting the exact wording of your second definition there. So why is it that, why can't genre fiction also be literary fiction? And why can't genre fiction also be popular fiction?
That's interesting. I'm going to look something up, and I'm looking up Dune. Okay, it's quite a famous novel. It's a 1965 novel by Frank Herbert, and let me check what people define it as. So they say it's the world's best-selling science fiction novel. Okay, and Dune. That's interesting, because Dune has a lot of aspects that you would say is literary, wouldn't you? It's more than just the story that's being told in Dune. It has a lot of layers. I'm not saying that genre fiction is it's not three-dimensional. I'm not saying it's one-dimensional at all. I just want to be clear. But Dune is a science fiction novel, and epic science fiction novel. Would you consider that genre or literary?
Now, this is going to get really awkward, because now I'm going to out myself as never having read it.
It's okay, neither have I.
It's interesting, you know, in...
I was just waiting, it's like, oh, Cassandra's read it.
It's
on my list. It's on my to-be-read list, which is taller than myself.
To read list and
there is a very big list of stuff that I need to read myself and watch, including Star Wars, apparently. I use Dune. What would be your example of something similar to Dune then?
As far as literary science fiction.
Yeah, like where does it draw the line in between not just science fiction, but fantasy, if you want to go that far as well.
What about Philip K. Dick?
I suppose any of his works.
Any of his works.
Well, because... you go Android's Dream of Electric Sheep, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one's probably a really good example, because it, when it got adapted for film, it became quite noir.
Yeah.
Sci-fi noir, which mm-hmm. added another layer of genre on there.
Yeah.
They've, you know, still got a lot of meaning. They've still got a lot of care in the way the world's been built and what it's trying to say. but it's still very much sci-fi.
See, that's interesting, because I feel like you're drawing a distinction between this is a book that has a lot of care. It's philosophical. It has a lot of undertones and messages and running through it. But at the same time, it's science fiction. Does that mean it's not literary? I don't know. I feel like it still should be genre.
This is what I'm trying to say. I think literary fiction and popular fiction, you can't say that genre is popular fiction.
That's true. I
think
agree
genre
with that.
Can
yeah.
be applied to both. I think genre is a separate category. Mm-hmm. And this is why I think for emerging writers, bringing it back to...
now you're doing the segues.
Now I'm doing the segue.
Yeah.
Bringing it back to emerging writers, this is what gets really confusing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, should I be avoiding genre because I want to write something that's, you know, deep and meaningful, or I want to write genre? Does that mean what I'm writing is shallow and no one's going to take me seriously?
Sort of interject there, and I'm sorry for interjecting, but it's that thing you just said, you know, do I feel bad at all in those words, you know, should I feel bad that I'm writing in a genre? But honestly, I don't, whether or not those definitions exist, does it really matter in the long run? There's a thing I asked you in our interview, if I can remember, it was, you know, do you think about what kind of genre it is when you start writing, or do you consider the... you know, what people would categorize it as. And you said, not really, you know, you just write it. And then it falls under.
I think that there is the thing. When you're starting to write something, you don't need to worry at all. Is it genre? What genre? Is it popular
literary?
Fiction? Yeah. It can't be popular fiction because no one likes it yet because it doesn't exist.
Well, this is true, but the... part of the reason why I wanted to bring it up for our point of discussion, to talk about bring it back to screenwriting.
Yeah.
You mentioned that I've been working on this feature film for class. What's happened with that is it's gone through three different genre changes. And although the story, the events of the film are still the same, how they're framed has taken three different aspects. It's now more a horror film.
Yeah.
But at one point it was a monster film. Mm-hmm. And at another point it was a spy film.
Yeah.
Now, every time the genre has changed, I've had to completely rethink. Like, even my protagonist has now changed.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a sense, when you sit down to write it, when I came up with the story, I wasn't thinking about genre.
Yeah.
But when I'm thinking about the telling of it...
Mm-hmm.
Genre has suddenly become really, really important.
But aren't you thinking in terms of under the genre fiction umbrella, you've got these different, you know, genre like fantasy, science fiction, horror, you know, etc. But it's still falling under that umbrella, right?
Umbrella of genre.
Yeah, that idea of I'm writing genre fiction, you know, that term.
Well, I mean, a film is pretty much, unless you are sort of a vague art housey.
Yeah, if it's art house, yeah, that's true.
But even art house films, you know, you have certain conventions, you have certain ways of showing the story.
Yeah.
Even art house is a fairly vague term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that seems to be a catch-all for things that...
It's not understood very well. Well, I guess it's an art film.
Exactly. Does it make complete sense? Not really.
It's
Does
an
it
art
look
film.
Nice?
Yep.
Yes.
Anything that's foreign, it's probably an art film.
Does it need subtitles? Yes.
Yes, it's an art film. But does that just come down to just improper labeling? You know, when you say genre I think, you know, if you're talking about categorizing something, it's like, oh, this is horror, this is fantasy. But should that matter to you in that respect? Of, I think both those genres would
should
be taken seriously, really,
until it's a finished product.
But I think Cassandra's saying, like, in the telling of it, you know, in how do you make the decisions consciously and think. Yeah, but I think that's different to saying, oh, am I writing a literary fiction? I'm sorry, just, you know, do I come under the, if books, back again, if I'm going back to literature, does it come under the umbrella of literary or genre? You know, I think that's, it's like, am I writing Naked Lunch or am I writing Solomon Kane? You know, but I think the story should automatically fit, not specifically. See, that this is where it becomes confusing, because genre both describes a category and also describes the idea of genre and literary, which is a bit confusing. But you sort of see what I'm coming from, right? It's, should it matter when you start off writing whether you're coming under these two groups? And if you're writing in the genre, and then you can say whether it's fantasy or crime or whatever, is that a consideration? Like, would somebody in the fantasy crowd look down on you if you're doing like a science fiction novel or a screenplay?
I'm not really sure. I think people can look down on each other for whatever reason they feel suits their purpose. But I think when you're first coming up with a story, I don't think genre should be a consideration. I mean, if I come up with this great idea about this serial killer and this great detective that's going to catch the serial killer, well, you know, I'm pretty much, you know, going to have a crime novel of some description. If it's set in space, then I've got a crime novel and a sci-fi novel. But when I first think about it, I'm just thinking, oh, you know, there's this great serial killer, and there's this great character, and he's like this or she's like that. But at some point, you know, if I'm thinking it's going to be in outer space, at some point I've got to start thinking in sci-fi terms. Otherwise, why set it in outer space?
Do you think that's... I mean, the setting, science fiction. And by the way, is this actually your screenplay?
No.
I was about to say, because this actually sounds like...
If not, concept. Why not?
Yeah, why not? You should totally write this. Okay, this sounds great. My next one's there you go. Gave you some ideas. Or you gave yourself some ideas. But
and they're all Scandinavian.
No. Yeah, they have to be Scandinavian, preferably higher... English actors for some reason.
Yep.
Especially James Beaufort, just saying. Okay. Getting back to it again. So because your setting is science fiction, but your genre is, say, crime, shouldn't you operate under both mediums? As in, you should be taking not the tropes, because that sounds rather negative or rather cliche, but just shouldn't you be taking the ideas of crime fiction and science fiction together?
But yes, but my point was, at some point, I've got to start thinking about it. Because you were saying, you know, that you shouldn't consider genre when you first start writing.
Yeah.
But at some point, unless you're writing, you know, incredibly literary in a monologue about the guy who walks from his house to the shop to get milk and reflects on his childhood.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to have a lot of genre points to think about, but at some point, my characters, my story, my setting, these things are going to become relevant. And it's quite daunting, I think, for emerging writers to know, you know, am I doing this right? Am I being cliche? Am I not fitting the conventions? Yeah, how subtle or how strong should the conventions be? Yeah.
I think that's a thing, like a fine line between following conventions of a genre and being following the cliches of the genre, which can be tough, you know, and you may do it even without realizing you follow the beats, you know, specifically something like, say, a crime novel has, you know, all these conventions, which are, you know, we'll see in anything in any Law and Order, Midsummer Murders, whatever, Agatha Christie novel. And you think, do I want to be another one of those? Or do I, you know, do I want to purposely go outside the box? And I guess you can write yourself into a corner doing that.
Mm, yeah. And, yeah, yes, I would definitely agree with you, especially if, you know, you're writing in a genre, maybe you're not too familiar with it, especially. Like, we'll take that as an example. Yeah, I guess that would be actually.
I mean, I guess I've never written a space crime novel before.
Yeah, you should totally do that, Lucas. What are you doing? You haven't? Why are you on this podcast?
Is Sherlock Holmes public domain? I'd like to see him in space.
You know, actually,
could be done. I think he is public domain.
I think this is the Morning Bell compilation writing competition. Shall we do this? No, we shouldn't.
I don't know if we should desecrate Sherlock Holmes like that.
Probably not, because...
Yeah. I'm not his biggest fan, but I think I still think he deserves better.
A bit of sanctity. Mm-hmm.
Robert Downey Jr.'s already done damage enough.
Oh, no. Oh, we're going to criticize that movie.
Just put him in a space helmet.
It's Robert Downey Jr. You can't criticize
him. He's Robert Downey.
Apparently. But I can actually relate to this. Not in the space crime specifically, but crime. Because I had never written crime before. Okay? And this is, here you go, this is bringing it to an example that I've been in. I've actually experienced this. I write fantasy, generally speaking. Right? And I thought, you know, I've got this character in mind. I thought, and I've got a theme in mind because I work in themes, and okay, I want to tell a story about this particular emotional experience, whatever. And then I create this character, and I say, okay, I'm starting it off, and it turns out to be crime. You know, it seems like a pretty standard, maybe a bit too simplistic, Agatha Christie style crime, which means now I'm out of my depth. All I've been writing is fantasy. I've, you know, done a bit of science fiction again, but that involves fantasy elements. But now I'm in crime and fairly, you know, down to earth stuff. How do I do it? So what I did was, the process that I went through is I wrote the whole thing out, first drafted it. I read it, realized it was awful, asked somebody else, somebody that I thought was not supposed to be an expert on the genre, but somebody I knew who understood it and was able to read it. They read it. They said, okay, this is the things that stuck out to me as a reader. Okay, he's not a writer. And then I went back. I read it again. I looked at these points, looked at the narrative, and I thought, okay, these things need fixing. And I'm sort of talking you through my process of writing it out. And I then sat down, and I rewrote it, and I felt comfortable with it, and then I published it. By the way, I'm going to shout out that at the end. Haha. And I don't think in there I had a conversation of, oh, you know, maybe this is too cliche, and it might be. Right, there is a great chance out there. And after that, after the publication of that, I went back and watched a lot of crime, funny enough, after, just to see. And to a certain extent, I had followed a narrative pattern subconsciously. And, you know, it felt okay, but it you know, some bits needed changing, and went back to change it, etc. What I'm saying is, I don't think in that process that I felt the need to go back and have a look and say, okay, is this specifically crime? Because I would not determine that story as crime, even though others would. To me, it just felt, it's a character story, it's talking about a specific thing, maybe drama. I'd say it's drama, but it's the main central thing, tying it together, is crime. So that's an example of me not actually thinking about the convention. Maybe I would in other genres. If I wrote a romance novel, for instance, I'm like, okay, I'm out of my depth again. Time to go have a look at, you know, this kind of stuff. What's your way of looking at that then? If you're saying that you're feeling maybe out of your depth, or you're not comfortable, or whether am I following tropes or cliches, how do you work through that, Cassandra?
That's a good question. One of the things I thought was really interesting about what the story you were just saying was that how you sort of innately followed it, which in a way makes me think a lot of genre is almost like an archetype of story.
It's iterative, yeah.
As far as tackling something I'm not comfortable with, I guess I'd just play with things first.
Yeah.
Just, you know, even go over the top. Like, I don't write romance at all. But the few times I have sort of tackled that, I've started off as completely over the top, melodramatic, tragic, as silly
It's
as
Romeo and Juliet
possible.
or nothing for you.
Yeah, pretty much. Everyone dies. And then, pare it back, refine, take out all the silliness and work out what's actually important in this story, what's important about this relationship. I mean, if it's a romance, it's basically, it boils down to a relationship. So, I guess if I was tackling something that, a genre I'm not comfortable with, you can always sort of play it that way. But I guess I very rarely write in genres that I'm not comfortable with because I'm not, that's not the way I think of stories. It's not what I come up with. For me, a romance is quite unnatural because that's not the kind of stories that I tell. So I don't often have to come across that genre. Whereas things like, sci-fi spec fic or historical fiction, that tends to be more where my brain's at. But yeah, even just simple research, find the top examples of what constitutes that genre and read or watch. Like for my when my the film that I've been working on, when that became a spy film, I went back and watched things like The Spy Who Came In from the Cold,
I am.
a lot of sort of 60s, 70s, 50s spy films, just to get a sense of what the world was like, and how those films run, how they're telling the story. So research as well. If you're working in that world,
Yeah, that's really helpful. Research your world. And Lucas, what do you
Yes.
think?
What do I think? What in general?
Yeah, like your process of writing in something that's.
It's. I guess I. Well, the way I think of it, I guess in my way, I exclusively write comedy. Comedy is very broad. It's something with jokes in it. So I guess I'm thinking when I have this idea, it could be from anything. It's like, it's this, but it has jokes in it.
Yeah, so your base that you fall back on, no matter what genre you're in, goes into comedy anyway. So that's sort of your familiarity, you're saying?
It does, but of course there's different kinds of comedy. Pardon me. And I guess I have my particular style, which you try to adapt your style into whatever you're doing. I guess I don't stray too far. I guess I'm not like you. I'm not going into whatever my equivalent of writing a crime novel is. But not yet. I think my comment would trust would be something that isn't about that hasn't got jokes or is about video games. That's out. Then that's outside my wheelhouse, and it's. I guess I don't think about what I just think about the idea, the story for, and then I erase again. Talking about general ideas, research is very important. No matter, and when I say research, like films that sound like what you're going to do, or films that sound like something, resembling your idea or from that the best in that genre,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And this is a side note to this subject, mm-hmm. but it's something that I feel very strongly about, and that is it's fantastic to read and write and watch within the genre that you're writing in. But it's incredibly useful as a writer's tool to experience genres and other artistic mediums that are outside writing. Or, you know, even when we're talking about genre, maybe I really like science fiction, and then I watch it a lot or read it a lot, but I don't write it a lot. In fact, I never write it, for instance. That's an example. But it's great to see all these themes being played with, and sometimes you might learn something from another genre and then put that into practice in your genre. You know, I love reading books on philosophy because it gives me ideas to write in fantasy. And it goes across all sorts of things, and not just in terms of media that I consume. I really enjoy landscape gardening. I think landscape gardening is fabulous.
You do?
Wow, I've learned something.
Landscape gardening is great. I consume documentaries about it. I go visit gardens. It stimulates my mind. Somebody describes it as an artist's date, to do something that feeds your muse. And it's great. It's very useful. But yes, read outside your genre as well as expert within it.
When I'm thinking research, it's something you're not particularly familiar with. If I want to write a comedy about a couple of idiots talking shit, I don't need to research films about that.
No.
I've seen all of those films.
You're an expert in that genre.
Okay, yeah. Well, for example, now I'm thinking of an idea that involves editing / desecrating weird public domain films.
Okay.
So I've been just grabbing those and watching what I can.
Yeah.
So I was like, so what are these? And they're mostly cheesy sci-fi films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In under the genre of bad movies. That's not one I've not explored too much.
But you still have the basis of this is probably going to be a comedy.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's where your familiarity comes from. In terms of that, Cassandra and Lucas, you can both jump on this at the same time if you want. Do you find that when you write outside your genre, you import themes that you write within your genre of the thing you find most comfortable with?
Well, I guess for me, there's a difference between theme, like more universal themes. Is that what we're talking about?
I suppose. Anything you find comfortable, not just in terms of themes, and I just used that as an example, but, you know, anything that you often find yourself falling back, that you're comfortable with in one genre, you apply
like
it
dick
to...
jokes?
Well, you could. If that's your version of comedy, then you could apply that to all forms of writing, which I hope you don't. But, yeah, like, do you do that, Cassandra, in that respect, to feel comfortable with it? In the same way that Lucas said, oh, it's probably going to be comedy anyway, kind of thing.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe, like, everything's going to be tragedy, or everything's going to be horror, or everything's going to... Everyone's going to die.
Yeah.
I guess I probably do. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed sometimes when we do group work in class, it can be really hard for me not to... push for the sorts of things and the sorts of stories and the type of tellings that I'm more comfortable with others do want to write comedy or romance or family drama.
Yeah.
That's another genre I'm not terribly comfortable with, family drama. so sometimes it's, it's hard to compromise. Mm. Or maybe I'm just too arrogant and strong-willed.
Yeah, like workshopping. Oh my goodness, that's a That's a, what is the actual terminology for that? A bucket of snakes? A bag of snakes? What am I looking for here? A
can of worms?
That'll work.
That'll but work. Worse. Is that what you're talking about?
But worse. Imagine a can of worms.
Just a really big can of worms?
But with snakes. Yeah. And
those Gippsland worms that are over a meter long.
That sounds horrifying. Workshopping. And I've been a big proponent, and I love workshopping. But often, like you just said, and you said you resist the tendency to put your own writing style on it. Please, please, I appeal to every writer. Or if you're wanting to be a writer, if you ever are in a workshopping group, please do not enforce your writing style or what you want to see on, as in what you feel you would do in this piece. It's something that a lot of emerging writers struggle with when they get into workshops, is to say, oh, and this is a couple of very obvious things not to do in a workshopping thing. And I guess we're transitioning now to a workshopping.
Yeah, I should clarify that I would not do this in workshopping.
No, definitely not.
If you bring a family drama or a romance piece to me for workshopping, I will not say everyone dies at the end and it's a tragedy.
And if you don't do that, then this is the most awful piece ever. No, I definitely not. But I know there's a lot of people that would. You know, there's a lot of emerging writers who feel that is good criticism and constructive feedback, because when you get into workshopping, and this is my point, so maybe you guys can add some as well, is first, do not say, I have no idea about this genre, so I'm probably not going to comment. Don't say that. Second thing, don't say, I just didn't like this story. Okay, that's the second thing. Third, and this is a bit more complex and less dumb than the other two, is please, when you comment on somebody's work, always look at the writing of it. Look at what they're trying to achieve, what they are trying to achieve, not what you are trying to achieve, what they're trying to achieve with the work, and try and help them to get to the end goal. So you find out what they want, you find out the genre, you find out what they're looking for, and then you try and help them in that regard. Even if you don't have an experience in the genre, you can really help them in terms of the telling of the story. And you know, those are the big things with me. And I've been in workshopping before, and those things have often come up. What do you think as your critiques or as your helpful hints on workshopping?
Pretty much agree with exactly what you just said. Another thing I would probably add is if you start your sentence with, well, this is the way I would do it.
Stop yourself. Yeah.
Stop yourself.
Yeah.
I've probably been guilty of that. But yeah, divorcing yourself from the critique you're giving, and from, or another thing which I probably do as well is, oh, I've got a great idea of how you could deal with this, or I, you know, oh, you know, you could do it this way.
Yeah.
It's probably not warranted either.
Mm-hmm. And how about the most obvious one is, you should probably not write, because I don't think you're cut out for it. I'm not kidding. That actually exists out there.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's especially common if you're doing online workshopping.
There's your problem.
Please. I'm not dissing online workshopping.
I am.
I've seen a lot of terrible stuff on online workshopping. There's something to be had by seeing somebody face-to-face and talking to them like normal human beings. It's really good, by the way, and you should probably do it. But yes, don't say that, please. It's really – it's not a great way to help somebody.
No one's ever going to get better if you cut them off at the knees.
Yeah.
Another one that I've actually had in workshopping was, we were talking about censorship earlier. I do love a good usage of strong language if the piece calls for it.
Mm.
And our works were distributed amongst the group randomly. And the woman who got my work when she was delivering her workshopping to the class, kept giggling, saying, "I can't say that word. I can't say that word."
Geez, that sounds familiar, Joel.
I critique things based on its value, but was this like simply, you know,
oh, this was in a weekend course.
Yeah.
So no one knew each other.
Yeah.
And she was an older woman, yeah. Very giggly, very very shy. But I think if you're at the point where you are, you know, in a workshop group, unless there are specific boundaries,
yeah.
You know, perhaps if you're in a children's book writing course. But I think we should be mature enough to understand that there are lots of words in this universe and not all of them are pleasant, and sometimes you have to use them.
And also, if you're ever in that situation and you feel uncomfortable saying something, then just don't talk about that. Yeah. You know, you can definitely talk about other things and you can comment on that, but you don't have to specifically say, "Oh, by the way, this is what I think you should do to your writing." You know.
Or say to the facilitator, "I'm not actually comfortable with this
yeah.
piece. Could I possibly swap with someone else?"
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we can deal with these things maturely
yeah.
and not wait until you're in front of the rest of the group and yeah.
Yeah.
Make me feel like a horrible person because mm-hmm. I used cuss words.
I've been on both ends, though, both as a writer, someone saying, "Oh, I don't know, that's a bit strong."
Yeah.
But sometimes it's whether it's appropriate or not. I remember One Piece had a lot of characters name calling and yeah. whatever. And it wasn't that the swearing, that there was swearing. It was just bad swearing. Like, poor quality.
As in it didn't suit the material kind of thing?
No, they were just shit insults.
Yeah, just like cliche.
Yeah, and just yeah. things that made no sense as well.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
But that's where it's not...
And as much as I'd like to go, "Well, you should be calling them this and this," I just cut it out.
Yep.
Okay. You don't need to end every sentence with, "You dipshit." Don't need to.
Because it doesn't add anything to the story in that respect.
No, you got to add something. It's got to yep. add punch.
Cassandra, you were yeah. going to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, that's where, you know, if you've got something to support your critique, then that's fair enough.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's just, you know, "I don't like swearing. I'm going to giggle."
Yeah.
You know, that's
probably the best critique ever. No, I'm being sarcastic, by the way, guys.
You know, if it's...
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, perhaps the story could be dealing with a topic which you're really not
comfortable with. And that's
with.
Definitely been...
And that's not yeah, anything yeah. to do with the writing. It's mm-hmm. just simply what's being dealt with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you are on the other side and you're reading a story where, you know, it is, you know, mm-hmm. the swearing or the violence or... sexuality is, you know, eroticism is way over the top and it's not suiting.
Yeah, for you. Yeah.
You know, but then you'll have justification to say that,
yep.
you know, I don't think this 5-year-old would be, you know, swearing like this and ripping people's throats out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, science fiction, so it's okay.
Maybe, you know, but.
Yes.
But you're writing a children's book for 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
This is probably not going to work.
Yeah, things that actually make sense to the, you know, that gets beyond just the simple, "Okay, I feel uncomfortable with this. This is actually, oh, this I don't think this suits the content," or you know. And I've seen that at workshopping where people are also uncomfortable with certain things. Just, you know, if you feel uncomfortable, that's fine. You don't need to comment, or you can swap, or if you're in a class or whatever, just say, you know, say comments about the things you did like, but do not go on a rant on that person and say, "Oh, I think this is terrible and I think you're a terrible person for including this." That thing might resonate with you in a very bad way, and it's definitely happened. I've definitely seen it.
I'm not sure. Oh, sorry, I'm trying.
Yep, go but for it, Lucas.
Not having ever tried online online wake shopping, I very rarely, maybe once,
yeah,
seen something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
And
so it's
it gets down
made,
to personalities
it's possibly a result
as well.
of being online the partial hour.
That one wasn't online. And the specific example being like, you know, it was just two people that apparently did not like each other very much.
Well, that can happen.
Of the result of this, you know, this particular thing. And that's fine. But often you should critique the work and not the person. And that's just an overall thing in life, by the way, guys. Critique what's said or something you don't like. Don't critique the person in specifically. But yes, any final comments? Because we've actually been going for a full hour, which has been a really good conversation. We didn't get to any other topics since this one sort of meandered and changed topics, which is what a podcast, what this podcast aims to do, just help emerging writers. But yeah, final comments, guys. What do you think? Any closing thoughts on workshopping, on genre?
Don't worry about it too much. Not to begin with.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. Not to begin with. But I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing to think about at some point.
Yep,
don't get hung up. If it means the difference between writing and not writing, stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. But if you are at the point where, you know, perhaps something's not working or, you know, something's lacking, yeah, genre could be a good place to look.
Definitely.
And it could be that what you thought was one particular genre is actually another.
Yeah.
Like my monster film turning into a spy film, now comfortably sitting in a horror film.
You know, I really want to read the script now because that sounds incredibly intriguing.
Someone give me $50 million and you can watch it.
There you go. You heard it right here, ladies and gentlemen. Send the check to Cassandra L.
This is the Australian film industry. You can have one
million.
No one's
got $50 million.
You can have 1 million if you're lucky.
Oh, goodness. Are we making shots at the Australian film industry now? I don't think we're that high profile, man.
I like the Australian film industry as much as anyone. But no one has $50 million.
Talking about Mr. $50 million, Lucas.
Yes?
Final comments.
I just did one.
You did, didn't you?
What's yours, genius?
Thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. I really appreciate the fact that you came and listened to all three of us gander on about writing and just general topics that would help an emerging writer, and maybe if you're an experienced writer that you found this useful. Guys, where can we find you on the internets and other things if we want to follow your work? Go ahead and shout out Cassandra. We'll start with you.
Okay. I do now have a website. Very exciting. It's CassandraL.net. No spaces between the Cassandra and the L. So CassandraL.net. Not a lot on there at the moment, but hopefully we'll see some updates soon.
Fantastic. And Lucas?
Okay. Well, if you'd like, you can go check out themorningbell.net for all Morning Bell related things, including this. Or our Facebook page, which is, well, you just search for the Morning Bell in the Facebook. Or we also have a Tumblr page, and we have a Twitter, which we don't look at. Please don't send us stuff. We'll probably not answer it. Go to the Facebook page.
That's it. And submissions close.
At the time of recording. In 38 minutes.
Yes. So
by the time this is out, they'll be gone.
Unfortunately, you cannot submit this time. But when is the next submission period, Lucas?
I don't know.
In the next quarter, I'm guessing, because it's the quarterly.
In roughly 3 months' time.
Exactly. So look out for that. Check them out on the website.
And I guess look on our website and or Facebook page for more info on about the upcoming issue.
Fantastic. Also...
Also,
if you have any questions about the podcast, you can tweet at any of us. You can tweet at me, so I might as well plug myself now. You can find me at The Pen of Joel on Twitter. You can check me out on thepenofjoel.com. That's the website. And if for some reason you're listening to this podcast, and you're interested in looking at narrative and video games, yes, I know, that's a pretty random thing, you should check me out on The Pen of Joel on YouTube. I do related stuff to narrative, and not just for video games, but narrative structure as a whole. And I host this podcast because these people are awesome, and I think they're doing a very good thing for the emerging writer scene, both here in Australia and also abroad. We'll have links in the description below this podcast, Lucas, if I'm not wrong, for all the things we mentioned. So thank you very much for listening, and
well,
hopefully
we're going to have to do it now.
We're probably going to have to do it now. We'll see you all in the next podcast. Thank you very much for listening. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.